Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, everyone. First of all, I'd like to thank you for coming out to the Tattered Cover Bookstore and supporting your locally owned and independent business. I'm pretty excited this evening. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back to the Tattered Cover Dr. Temple Grandin. We are so lucky to have such a brilliant person right here in the state of Colorado with us. As you all know, she's a professor of animal science at Colorado State University and has been putting out some best-selling books for a long time now. And like I said, I think that we're just really lucky to have her as part of Colorado. And I'm just going to keep this really short because you are all here to listen to her, of course. So talking about tonight, her newest book, The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum, please join me in giving a warm welcome to Dr. Temple Grandin.
Well, it's really good to be here tonight. I'm probably wondering, most people here are probably kind of interested in autism, is that right? Yes. A lot of people are interested in autism. And I thought maybe I'd start talking about one of the early chapters in the autistic brain, is how they've changed the diagnosis over the years. See, the thing is, diagnosis for things like ADHD, autism, and depression, they are behavioral profiles. It isn't like going in and doing a lab test for tuberculosis or meningitis or hepatitis, and they go, yeah, you got hepatitis. It doesn't work that way. And when we laid out the whole diagnostic spectrum over the years, it's kind of really kind of shocking how they've changed it. And in 2013, they've narrowed the definition a bit. See, back in the 80s, you had to have speech delay to be autistic. Then in the early 90s, they added Asperger's, and then you no longer had to have speech delay. Just be socially awkward. Now in 2013, they've taken out the Asperger's and they're going to make that social communication disorder, so you won't be autistic unless you have repetitive behavior and fixated interest to go along with it. But the thing that's interesting is schizophrenia, depression, and ADHD, they've broadened. You know, so someone's just a little bit weird. Maybe they're going to get labeled schizophrenia, not otherwise specified, and normal grieving is now considered depression. So the other things they've broadened. But autism, they've narrowed it. And I think one of the reasons they've narrowed it is so many people have gotten under the autism, you know, thing. Now, the thing is, don't get locked up into these labels. People just get so much into the label. And they'll say, well, is my kid PDD-NOS? Well, they got rid of that. So is your kid still PDD-NOS? You know, pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified? You know, they got more categories than you got brain systems. And people just get totally hung up on these labels. And they'll say things to me like, well, what's the most important thing to do for autism? Well, if a child's two and not talking, the most important thing is hours and hours of early intervention. Every expert will totally agree on that. But the problem is, autism is a really big spectrum. When I was a little kid, I had no speech. I had all the full-blown autistic symptoms. I was the kind of kid that back in the 50s, they just sort of got rid of them in institutions. And then the kids that had the normal speech development that were just kind of quirky and weird, they pounded enough social skills into those kids, so they got jobs. See, one of the things that's difficult is you've got such a broad spectrum. I think it's difficult sometimes for educators to shift gears because they tend to get locked into the words of a label. And I'm seeing too many smart, geeky kids not getting stretched enough. You got to stretch these kids. And I have to say, tonight I had to be stretched. I got lost coming down here. They told me to go down a Spear, turn left on 15th. I couldn't find 15th. It's not clear where it is. Finally got here after I called up Cheryl, and if I hadn't called up Cheryl, I would have been told, where is Cheryl? She should be here, right there. Well, thank you for helping to guide me, or I wouldn't have gotten here tonight. Now, the thing is, when you have kids, you kind of get ADHD labels, dyslexia, you know, learning problem labels, all these different labels. You tend to have uneven skills. Often they're good at one thing and bad at something else. And the big problem is if everyone puts too much emphasis on the deficit and not enough emphasis on the thing that they could turn into a career. When I was a young child in third grade, my ability in art was always, always encouraged. You might have another little kid who has good ability in math. And one of the worst things I'm seeing happening to the little math geniuses is they won't let them jump ahead, because they usually have to have special ed in reading. So they make this kid do baby fourth grade math over and over again, and then they turn into a behavior problem. No, if they can do high school math, let them do high school math in a third grade classroom. Math is one place. Don't hold them back. That is one field you just move them on ahead. And some of these kids, they can just do it without showing the work. I think it's hard for people to understand that they don't. These kids think differently. They just don't get it. All I'm going to say is, if you've got a kid that's like that, I want to rule out cheating, so I want to put him somewhere where he's stripped of electronics, and then he's got to demonstrate that he can actually do this. Yes. And the different kinds of minds, you've got the photorealistic visual thinker, like me, who can't do algebra. And in the autistic brain, go through in detail the different kinds of minds. And the other thing I really like is I actually found research that back up my observations about two kinds of visual spatial thinking. You have the object visual thinker like me that thinks in photographic pictures, very associative, has trouble with algebra. Kids that have trouble with algebra, let's jump them to geometry. Then there's the more where you are located in space, the mathematical pattern thinker. These kids often have trouble with reading. And there are two types of visual spatial thinking, and there's research to support that. And then another kind of mind is the word thinker. This is the kid that loves history. History is his favorite subject. And they're definitely not visual thinkers, but they're often really good at writing. What you got to do when these kids get their specialized fixations is broaden it. If he likes airplanes, let's read about airplanes. Let's do math with airplanes. You know, or if the kid just is doing the same airplane picture over and over again, say, well, let's do the airport. Let's do a place a plane flies to. You see how I'm making an associative link back to an airplane? Lots of times transportation devices are favorite things, and they go to lots of different places. So you make an associative link back to that fixation. Another thing is, people on the spectrum, a lot of these kids with problems, they're bottom-up thinkers. In other words, every concept is learned by specific example. If you want to teach what up and down mean, you've got to maybe have 7 or 8 specific examples. I go up the stairs. I put a cup up on the shelf. I got up off the bed. I jumped up on the wall. You know, I hopped up and down. Now I'm doing both of them. I went down the stairs. I laid down on the bed. So you've got to give a bunch of different examples. Otherwise, they're not going to get it. And how do you learn concepts like, you know, what's rude behavior? What's good and bad? And you got to teach it by specific example. Well, one thing is good behavior is not having a tantrum, not stealing stuff. These would all be examples of good behavior. And, you know, you got to get kids out in the real world. I'm seeing too many of these kids too sheltered. I'm seeing too many of these kids on the high end of the spectrum. They don't know how to shake hands. They don't know how to order food in restaurants. They just, because you've got to stretch them. You got to push them some. If you don't push them some, they don't develop. But on the other hand, no sudden surprises. Cannot have sudden surprises. Also, you can give them choices. When I was 15, I was afraid to go to my aunt's ranch. And my mother said to me, well, you have a choice. You can go for 2 weeks or you can go for all summer. I had a choice. But I wasn't going to not go. And once I got out there, I loved it. I just loved it. And where did I get good social interactions? I got social interactions through shared interests. When I was in high school and I was getting teased and tortured, the places where I was not teased and tortured was horseback riding, electronics lab. And just yesterday, I was in Bend, Oregon. That's where Google has a big data center. They drove me around the data center. They won't let you in it. It's top secret. But I got to see the outside of it. But what I did get to see is a program that that Google and other tech companies are sponsoring with local school kids, especially some of the Asperger kids, to teach them how to use 3D software called SketchUp. And it's free software that's available on the internet, and the kids can draw things on SketchUp and then print it with 3D printers. Well, you want kids getting into those kind of cool things. You see, in the 60s, our electronics lab was you put a rubber membrane on a big speaker and you glue mirrors on it. And then when you reflect the light off of it, it makes a great light show in time with the music. It's still kind of a cool experiment, even now. But the students that were involved with shared interests aren't the ones that do the teasing. You're going to get friends and social interactions through shared interests. Things like, you know, agriculture programs, auto mechanics. When I was riding horses, there was no teasing. I think one of the worst things the schools have done is taken out all the hands-on classes, cooking, sewing, woodworking, all of those kinds of things. Because if I hadn't had those classes, I would have gone nowhere. Those are the things that made school worthwhile. You know, and I hear really bad things where they're going, well, you took the kid out of band so he could have an extra period of math. No. You don't take them out of band. The one thing that for that particular kid made school worthwhile. And right now, we got a shortage of jobs like automobile mechanic. We got a shortage in this country of the skilled trades. And we're getting, one of the things that's happening in China, and I just read it's happening in Korea. They're getting too many business majors, and they don't have enough skilled trades. And those are good jobs. Our oil industry right here in this state screaming for certified welders. I went to a business meeting last year, and I talked to oil industry executives, and they said they just don't know what to do when their 50-year-old certified welders retire. You know, if you want to keep oil wells safe, you've got to do the well casings really right. And that takes really, really skilled labor. It's a messy job, but it's a very, very important job so that you don't get contamination of groundwater. Now, another thing I feel very strongly about is teaching kids work skills. When I was 13 years old, my mother arranged a little sewing job. And I was just with a local seamstress who worked out of her home, and I took apart dresses and I hemmed them. When I was 15, I was cleaning horse stalls. When I was 16, I shingled the barn roof at our school, and redid our ski tow house. When I was in college, I did, you know, career-related internships. You know, my mother helped set some of this stuff up. You know, people will go, well, there's no programs for this. Well, how about just set it up that the kid, when he's 12, has to walk two dogs every day at not his own dogs, next-door neighbor's dogs. Because I got to get something to replace the paper route. Something that they do every day. Because they got to learn that discipline of work. Or maybe museums will take kids as little as 12 to be tour guides in museums. And then they've got to learn public speaking. You know, these are the kinds of things you got to get him into. There's a little neighborhood store, and he can go over there after school and help stock the shelves. But it's a job. They've got to learn that work, because I'm seeing too many situations where I'm seeing smart kids graduating from college and they can't get and keep jobs. You know, like I know about a guy that went through a very, very prestigious design school, and then when he got employed, he didn't want to make his employer stupid bird videos. Well, it is called work, so maybe you better make really good stupid bird videos. And then you better put them in your portfolio so you can show them off. So how did I sell jobs? I mean, I started out my stuff one little tiny project at a time. And in the HBO movie, I walked up to the editor of the Farm Arrangement, and I got his card. And that's true. That happened. And I've had people say to me, well, how'd you get the guts to do that? Well, when I was 8, I had to put on my party dress. In fact, I liked doing this. When Mother had dinner parties, I would shake hands with every guest and serve hors d'oeuvres to the guests. And Mother, she'd coach me on how to do it. That taught important social skills. And she probably had a dinner party, you know, like every other month she'd have a pretty nice dinner party. And that teaches social skills, you know, and you just have to be taught how to shake hands, how to do these things. Let's look a little bit about jobs for the visual thinkers. Well, things like graphic design, industrial design. See, what I've done with the livestock is basically industrial design. Oh, and I Googled the JVS Swift plant the other day. You can see my curved facility. Really nice and clear, high-def picture. Really, really cool. You can just Google JVS Swift Greeley. You can see one of my designs. Fort Morgan's out in the country, so it's blurry, and the curved part's underneath a metal shed, so you can't see it. But, you know, half the cattle in this country are handled in facilities I've designed. I think that's doing pretty well for somebody they thought that was going to be retarded. And what I did is I made myself good at something that was a specialized interest. So how did I sell myself? I sold myself, first of all, I started writing articles for the Farm Arrangement, and I got a reputation for writing good articles. And then when I got a design job, I had drawings I could show people. And in the HBO movie, my actual drawing is on the table when I'm explaining to the guys about, you know, why my system works. And you sell yourself by showing your portfolio, showing off your work. Well, now with all the fancy phones, you can put the portfolio on your phone. And I've had parents say, oh, my kid does really good work. And I go, is it on your phone? Because you never know where you might meet somebody where you can show it. That is something I figured out a long time ago. That if you just meet the right person, they can open the door. I mean, 80% of all jobs are through networking. They're through the back door. They're not through, you know, applying online and that sort of stuff. Now, one of the things where I think research is really needed, and I've got a major chapter in the autistic brain on this, is the sensory problems. And you can have sensory oversensitivity in conjunction with dyslexia, autism, depression, ADHD, learning problems, all kinds of stuff. And sensory problems can range from nuisance to being totally debilitating. And if there's one area where they need to be doing research, it's on sensory. But one of the problems is you can't do research on sensory just based on whether or not a kid has autism. Because maybe out of 20 kids with autism, only 2 have very severe visual problems where they can't stand the flicker of fluorescent lights. And they actually sometimes see the print jiggle on the page. If a child's having trouble with reading, ask him if he ever sees the print jiggle on the page, because there's some really simple things you can do for that, like printing the work on different pastel papers, maybe light pink, lavender, light blue, light green, gray, tan, play around with different fonts and backgrounds on the computer, and some people are helped by pale tinted glasses. Now, another problem in auditory, I had problems with loud noises bothering me. Didn't like loud noises. Now, loud noises are sometimes better tolerated if the person initiates the horrible sound, like the horrible smoke alarm sound. So you might wrap it up in the towel to start with, and then you gradually unwrap it. Another problem is I had problems hearing hard consonant sounds. So my speech teacher would slow down, and she'd say, cup, and then she'd go, cuppa, and then she'd go, cup, and then she'd go, cup. And she'd alternate back and forth between saying it the regular way and saying it slowing down so I could hear those hard consonants. Because when the grown-ups talked really, really fast, it went into gibberish, just all of vowel sounds. So slow down when you're talking. Now, I still can't stand scratchy clothes against my skin. That's still a problem. And you're not going to get scratchy stuff against my skin. That just really, really bothers me. But these are things that need to be studied. And in order to study it, you have to assign subjects to studies based on, do they have a visual sensitivity problem? Is there a problem with sound sensitivity, smell sensitivity, taste sensitivity, you know, or touch sensitivity? You know, you have to assign them to groups based on that, because the sensory issues, when you just lump it all into autism, are very variable. And one of the things that's good in the DSM, the 5 version, you know, the 2013 version, is one of the symptoms that you can have is sensory problems. And that's actually good that they've done that. Now, a lot of people are worried about, now this is where I get problems with attention shifting. That distracts me, and it takes me much longer to shift back and forth between 2 different things. And I still have some problems with that. I have a very difficult time screening out those sort of things. I think what we'll do now is I think we'll just open it up for questions. But maybe before we do, I just want to end up. You know, Albert Einstein had no speech until age 3. What would happen to him in today's school system? How about little Stevie Jobs, a weird loner who brought snakes to school, according to Business Week magazine, and teased horribly, had to leave one high school and go to another high school, and the thing that saved him was the neighborhood computer class. You see, that is the shared interest thing again. That's why I put so much emphasis on that. And you can have shared interest things. I mean, it could be automobile fixing cars. It could be art. It could be a church choir. It could be a lot of different things. A book club, all kinds of different things, a history club, a geology club, astronomy club. Get them involved in the shared interests. Okay, let's go on to some questions, okay?
So it sounds like you're saying
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying that you don't do anything with the weaknesses, but what I don't want to see is that we pound away on weaknesses to the point that we forget about the strengths. Because my whole career in designing is based on my art ability. It's not based on my math ability, more on my kind of art ability. And I was always encouraged to do lots of different kinds of art, not just to do the same kinds of horse heads over and over again. You've got to do other things. You've got to broaden skills out. You've got to learn how to do assignments. I mean, people don't want to hear me talk about cattle chutes. They want me designing them, not talking about them. You see, you've got to start thinking about what's he going to be when he grows up. But I'm seeing too many situations where I'm seeing too many smart kids becoming a video game recluse on Social Security. And the thing that makes me just crazy is that these kids are much milder than I ever was. Much milder kids. And one place where a line was drawn in the sand with me is becoming a recluse in my room. That was not going to be allowed. Absolutely not going to be allowed. That they let me off the hook on a lot of studying and stuff. But while I was not studying, I was learning work skills. But I wasn't going to become a recluse in my room. And why did they want to become a recluse? Because of anxiety. And as I got through my 20s, it got worse and worse and worse with tons of colitis attacks. And that finally had to be controlled with antidepressant medication. There's an awful lot of people, especially us visual thinkers and some of the math thinkers. Well, teenagers and adults are going to need a little dab of Prozac because you've got to just cut that anxiety, but a very, very low dose, because if you give too much, you get agitation and insomnia, and that's a disastrous mess. And lots of times doctors are raising doses when they ought to be lowering them.
I understand that you were raised in a farm. Will you take us back to 50-plus years ago? What I'm really curious about is there was not a lot of information out there. Was the fact... I was wondering how your mother really picked up on these things. Was it just the nature?
Some of it is just the 50. Some of it's just the 50s way kids were brought up. Fortunately, when I was 2 1/2, and I was taken in to the doctor, I didn't go to a psychiatrist. I went to a neurologist, a real famous neurologist at Boston Children's Hospital, who tested me to make sure I did not have petite mal epilepsy, and she tested me to make sure I wasn't deaf. And then she referred my mother to a little speech therapy school that two teachers taught out of the basement of their little house. And they basically did ABA. They did the same things that are done today. And then when I was 3, mother hired a nanny and played constant turn-taking games. And then she could see that I was starting to develop. And I was very lucky that she got that right advice very, very early on. And then later on, you know, there was people saying, well, maybe she had to be institutionalized. But, you know, by the time I was 4, I was fully verbal. Then she talked to the little local a private school. It was a regular school, and I was mainstreamed into a little class of 12 kids with an older, experienced teacher, and they kind of, you know, just informally made some arrangements. And you see, what I'm saying, when I think back in the 50s and 60s, I can think of kids I went to school with that just were mainstreamed, and they were the Asperger type of kids, just kind of geeky and nerdy, got teased a bunch. And they got enough social skills pounded in, because in the 50s, man, boy, kids were taught table manners. Kids were taught these things in a much more rigid way. That's just how kids were brought up. So what I'm seeing with the more mild or Asperger types, the ones where there's no speech delay, I'm seeing them in almost more trouble today. Now, where a diagnosis really helps, and I have a book called Different, Not Less, which is 14 old Aspies that got diagnosed later in life, is with their relationships. That's where a diagnosis gives insight. Real insight. But on the work stuff, I think it's actually held him back, because it's poor little Aspie, you know, he doesn't have to learn how to order his hamburgers or whatever. I'm going, oh yeah, he does. And I had to figure out, you know, I was on the phone, but I managed to get here. I didn't just go crazy and go, well, I'm just gonna go home because I can't get here. You know, you got to do it. But the more milder Asperger types, they manage. I mean, I can think of people that run the maintenance shop at a large meat plant that I know are on the spectrum. They're all over everywhere, the ones that are my age. And then I'm seeing Junior getting addicted to video games. And people say, well, you're just an old fogey that's, you know, showing your age. But the problem is that they're not getting jobs. They're not supporting themselves.
When you were born, I'm going to guess that the incidence of autism was maybe 1 in 50,000. Today they're saying it's 1 in 50 school-age children. What are your thoughts?
Why has autism increased? Well, you see, in the 90s, they changed it where you didn't have to have speech delay. So that added a whole big bunch of kids. You see, prior to that, you had to have speech delay and autistic symptoms to be autistic. Also, another thing that's happened is a lot of intellectual impairments are getting put under autism. And then I think there is some severe autism that actually has increased. Okay, right there. Well, she's been doing a lot of stuff with parents. One thing that she's been working on is trying to get different groups of different heads of organizations together to talk and network, so that people don't reinvent the same wheel at different places. She just had a really good sense of how much to push me, and I had an interesting conversation with a teacher just a few months ago that worked at a community college, and she had a son that she's pretty sure was probably Asperger's, but they just called him Weird Jake. And she'd haul his butt up in the morning, get him out the door, and he ended up in a really good tech job. And she was wondering, well, what if I'd known he was Asperger's? Would I have pushed him quite so hard? In fact, in the Different But Not Less book, there's a lady in there that's a vice president at Intel in tech and programming stuff. And she had a lot of problems after her dad died and got diagnosed with Asperger's. And her boss asked her the million-dollar question. If you had known you had Asperger's, would you have gone and achieved as much as you did at Intel? You see, that's the million-dollar question. Well, what I hope I've done is I've given you some insights, and I want to thank you all for coming tonight.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks as we podcast Authors on Tour.